Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, S&P Futures down 11, Nasdaq Futures up 9, Dow Futures down 91. This is after the Fed talked yesterday. We were up all day, and then we were up after the announcement. And then as soon as the Fed guy started talking, as soon as he got near the end of his speech, down we went. Down we went, just like a plane going down. What do you think of that, Lou?
If you think the stock market tanks over some random words from the Fed chair, what do you see what it's going to do when Russia puts a nuke on Ukraine on the basis of the supposed attack on the Kremlin the other couple of days or a couple of days ago? Did you see that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So this, and I'm gonna lead with a brief discussion of military technology because one, it potentially can destabilize even the most solid of investment markets, and two, because it's an area that, you know, I think investment is going to be growing for the next 5 to 10 years, and maybe forever. So what it looks like happened, and I'm guessing off a number of reports and sources, unclassified sources that I'm reading, is that the Ukrainians were able to get some slow-moving pre-programmed drones, which you can buy for a couple of $100 each, and maybe put some fireworks in them, because that's what it looked like they were, or some small explosive charges, and fly them through the heart of Moscow to a point right over the Kremlin. And what I don't think people understand is just how difficult it is for any kind of air defense system to spot something like that. Those drones, you can program those drones to fly behind buildings and use buildings as radar shielding.
What is their range?
Well, I mean, it can be a couple of miles, it can be 10 miles. It can be further than that if the drone's big enough, but that defeats the purpose. You want something small.
But it didn't come from Ukraine, the country.
No. Oh no, I don't think so. I think they smuggled it into Moscow and launched it from maybe a Moscow suburb. But the point is that these things in their current mode are almost undetectable. The only defense against them is some kind of wide-ranging, broad-spectrum electronic interference system that can put up a screen that effectively jams the ability of the drone to navigate, like using GPS, or scrambles its electronics. But effectively what you've got to do is make the thing, I mean, for these kinds of systems, these cheap systems, what you have to do is make the thing, cut it off so that it can't use external sources for mapping or guidance. And these things can fly. I've got one. I mean, I've got a cheap one that I play with. And you know, it's incredible. You can, you know, fly it at slow speeds. You can fly it at an altitude. You can give it GPS points to hit that it'll move from point to point. It always comes back to, or it can, if you lose contact with it, it will simply turn around and fly back to the spot of launch. and hover about 10 feet off the ground so you can find it. But these things are virtually undetectable, and you can imagine, let's just say that instead of, you know, setting off a light explosive charge over the Kremlin, and you know, the Russians, maybe the Russians are telling the truth, although I don't know why they would start now, that they were able to intercept it and divert it from trying to assassinate Putin. You know, my thought is that this was a straight up, the Ukrainians are not suicidal. This is a straight up technology demonstration of you can run, but you can't hide. You can imagine, for example, an assassination team armed with, you know, 20 of these things, and they launch them either in a swarm or individually flying through a city with a target, you know, with a small, you know, shape charge in the thing, and a particular target like a car or somebody walking on a street, and you're not going to be able to stop them. Not without some very sophisticated sensing and prevention technology.
What is the rules of warfare on any level? It always seems that the person who's got the might seems to think they can always make the rules. It's like if Mike Tyson lived on my block, there's only so many days that he would say the only way we can do this is bare knuckle fighting before I run him over with my Suburban.
It's the Lou Michaels variant of the golden rule. You know, whoever has the gold makes the rules.
Well, that's right. But I mean, it's not like these guys haven't been pounding the living crap out of the other guy's capital for a year now. So,
oh right.
So
no,
all of a sudden, you can't come near ours. Oh wait a minute, you're the one who started the war. A war is a war.
Well, they haven't. What they did not do, and they issued a threat, and I haven't seen any news reports about attacks on Kiev this morning, but they issued a threat to the Ukrainians and said, if you do something like this again, we will start long-range missile attacks on your capital, aiming at your government facilities to try to kill your government.
Which they already have, haven't they?
No, they haven't. They haven't done that kind of. They did try to send special operations teams into Kiev to capture and kill Zelensky, but they haven't sent missiles into Kiev in any kind of appreciable numbers aimed at the government buildings. They may have hit one or two, but they haven't mounted a full scale strike. I think this was a technology demonstrator for the Russians that the Ukrainians are basically saying, listen. You know, there's going to be some stuff happening to you.
What makes you think it's not enemies of Putin and Russia?
Could well be that too. My point is that this kind of technology is everywhere. It's readily available, and you know, our strategic thinking is a little behind. I mean, you know, the Russians have a slightly more repressive society than we do. Imagine if a bunch of the crazies that occupied the Capitol building, or a bunch of the crazies that occupied the Wisconsin State Capitol, or that attacked the Tennessee State Capitol, or that were in the Florida Capitol yesterday trying to stop legislation. Imagine if those people, you know, all were given, you know, the capability to launch drones individually. And just they've got to fly those things into the Capitol building and just have them buzzing around. How fast do you think that place would be cleared out?
Well, Carl talks about this a lot. It's sort of bizarre, Lou, when you say, right now I'm with you, the people sort of are the crazies that are doing this stuff. And the American way is to have a revolution should be at the ballot box. I mean, we sort of get that, yet I sit here and I watch every day, way more than I should, because it's what I do for my clients, so they don't have to. I listen to this crap all day long. Every single person that is supposed to be your employee does nothing but lie to you and give money to other people and take it from the people that vote for them. I've never seen anything like this in America. At some point, people are going to say, what the bleep? And it should be at the ballot box. Anybody who doesn't think all this banking crap is just to make the top four banks any bigger, I think you got to look a lot closer. Every single time something like this happens, it is the crisis is always generated by the Fed, and whenever we come out of the crisis that they then fix, allegedly, there's half as many banks. Now,
how interesting is it that the failure, the second largest bank failure in U.S. history, was you know, a page 10 story, you know, in most newspapers. The flash lasted for about 15 minutes on the crawler on you know, MSNBC or CNN, and now it's gone. Why is that? Why is there no? I mean, the report on Silicon Valley Valley Bank, and then I want to come back to this drone issue because of the implications for foreign policy. But the report on the Silicon Valley Bank, and I assume First Republic will show the same thing, showed gross mismanagement by the bank with heavily politically connected depositors that threw their weight behind the bailout. And you know, the elite classes, our elites, and that's how I refer to them now, our elites manipulate the system to look after their own interests first, and you know, pretty much the hell with everybody else. And so this is an ongoing theme. I'm not sure, though, it hasn't always been this way. It's much like what's going on with the mainstream or corporate media. I'm not sure it hasn't always been biased, and I'm not sure that these decisions
I think
the transparency now is much better.
I don't know about that. The transparency and having things spread through the internet is much better, but the original thought is not much better. The person who has something to say, a critical person, cannot get on the right station. Even the people on CNBC that used to talk bad about the Fed and what they were doing and where their policies were going to lead are never on anymore. Even the guys that were good, they were never rabble rousers.
No, but they don't have the same kind of volume of exposure, but they have exposure.
But I mean, you have to look for that.
Those people, but you can find it. Those people disappeared 50 years ago. Those people disappeared. The guys making the editorial decisions for the three major networks and the 10 major newspapers all came out of the same rough culture, kind of culture, and they all made virtually the same kinds of decisions. We just didn't see what was happening. It's much clearer now. I mean, you're watching, and again, I'm not going to lose track of my drone thought.
No.
You're watching this stuff that I also want to talk about with these latest crazy whistleblower charges against Biden and Blinken. I mean that stuff didn't see the light of day under the Democratic administration. It's astounding that it's seeing it now.
Let me finish the drone thing.
The scariest part about that whole drone operation is, as you noted, it could have been a domestic Russian operation. It could have been Ukrainian. I think it's more likely it was Ukrainian, again, to send a very clear message to the Russian leadership. We can reach you wherever you are. But the potential destabilizing influence here is dramatic. And if something would push, you know, the Russians to step up the intensity of the attacks that they're capable of doing on Ukraine, this would be the kind of thing that would do this is the kind of incident that causes a reaction by the Russian leadership.
It's dictatorship 101. Didn't Hitler do that the night before the night of broken glass? He'd blame something on the Jews.
Well, he'd been blaming a whole bunch of stuff on the Jews.
You're thinking of
the Reichstag fire, sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. And Putin's already done this. I mean, with Chechnya. I don't know if you remember the attacks on some apartment buildings in Russia, where they basically blew up, we're almost 100% certain the FSB, not the Chechens, blew up three or four apartment buildings in Moscow to provide justification for a major hit in Chechnya. This is perfectly consistent with the way they operate. My point is this: you know, we've talked on the show many times about, you know, economic trends and everybody's plans and all this. And I keep coming back, because I'm a foreign policy guy, I keep coming back to the fact that notwithstanding your plans and notwithstanding your investment options, that a foreign policy disaster can shake markets.
Sure,
you know, just to the core.
But you know, you mentioned I'm always anxious to talk to you, Lou, but today was one of the most anxious because I wanted to learn about this drone attack. I've read 4 or 5 articles. I will bet you that if every person, if we stopped out last night over at the series for a little bit, I'll bet if I went around with a microphone to every table in the place, 99% of the people would have told you that these drones came from Ukraine, if anywhere. Not one article that I've read said, no, the maximum range of these things would be 100 miles. It had to come from somewhere around Moscow, like you just said. But now I know, but that's one person. Andrew knows, and the listeners. But, I mean, there's never any detail to any of this. I mean, we're talking about, you know, a country where the first thing the president did was say we're not giving out money supply numbers. I mean, we're talking about a total dearth of real information to people. First, they don't want to see it, and secondly, if they want to see it, it's not there. It's not explained to them, and it's part of it's their own fault. Nobody wants to buy a newspaper.
Let me throw one other wild card into this while we're projecting doomsday scenarios. I think it's quite likely that the Ukrainians have stopped talking to us about what their plans are, and that they look at us after this latest leak by that Air National Guard idiot. That the Ukrainians are basically saying, you know what, we're going to launch the spring offensive, and it's going to involve a bunch of separate attacks on Russian territory, where we're going to go after Russian assets. We're not just going after battlefront, targets, and we're not going to tell the Americans. Which means that our calculations are based on what is likely to draw a NATO response. Or a Russian counterstrike that will draw a NATO response, and then we're at war with Russia directly. The Ukrainians don't care about that. The Ukrainians look at this from the perspective of, you know, if we can get NATO dragged into this thing, this swings the pendulum in our favor, and so these kinds of attacks are highly destabilizing. And I don't think the Ukrainians are talking to us anymore. It's much like they're definitely getting the benefit of our weapon systems and things like that. But I don't think they're giving us the insight into their planning operations.
What makes the Russians think that they should be harmless in this? Just because they're bigger?
Yes, yeah, because they can exact a price from Ukraine that Ukraine can't compensate for. Sure. You know, if you poke, you know, this is the old bit about poking the bear. You know, if you're gonna poke the bear, you know, the bear, you could say, well, you know, the bear's done some stuff to us, and so we're gonna poke him back.
Yeah, like a year long invasion of everything in the place and wrecking everything. That's more than a poke.
Yeah, you poke, but you poke the bear. If you poke the bear directly, you have to be prepared to deal with the bear aroused, and. You know, Ukraine is not prepared for that. NATO is, but I think the Ukrainians look at this from the perspective of, we're going to poke the bear as much as we can to send a message to them and scare them a little bit. And if NATO gets dragged into this, you know, so what?
Well, I guess I don't have, I would have, if I'm in Ukraine and I can see those guys launching this stuff from a airfield 20 miles in Russia, I wouldn't hesitate to nail that airfield.
Oh no, they've gone further than that. Yeah. Did I tell you about the video of the drone attack on their surveillance, the Russian surveillance aircraft?
No.
So the Russians have a version of AWACS that they fly regularly. They've got like 10 of them. And so one of them supposedly got damaged, attacked, and the initial report was destroyed. But this video surfaces of this drone taking off out of this forest, and it flies out of the forest, and as it flies out of the forest, you see that it's near an airfield. And this thing flies over across the fence into the airfield. It actually lands on top of one of these surveillance aircraft. I mean, the video is
really?
The video
wow.
is fantastic, but it lands right on top of it, and then it looks around, and then it takes off and flies back again. And then the next video shows another one flying in, following the same route. It flies around the aircraft, lands on the satellite communication net or a node on the outside of the aircraft where it communicates with satellites. Yeah, and then the picture goes blank because the drone detonated. I mean, that was at a base, maybe 150 miles inside Russia, but the drone was flown out of a forest, maybe a mile and a half away. Well, I mean, it's Russia, the West, are riddled with opportunities for saboteurs or spies to do exactly this kind of thing. And if we get into a major conflict with a peer adversary or even one that's not, we have to take into account the fact that there literally is no place safe for military leadership or political leadership. You know, one of these drones, you know, I'm pretty sure that China and Russia know where Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, lives, where his house is. So, you know, 2 miles away, somebody launches one of these DFI drones, like the one I've got, with a thermo grenade on the bottom of it, and it flies slowly, you know, around dawn, cruises over his house, lands on his roof, and just waits. And he comes out, you know, the little camera says, okay, he's out, and the drone takes off from the roof, flies over the top of him, and drops a bomb on him. Or drops a grenade on top of his car.
Yours can do all this?
The variation of mine can do all this.
See, I was thinking of getting one when you go out for like a hike in the woods with your wife, it just follows you the whole way.
It does. This thing will do that. It'll geo-follow you. It tracks your phone.
Whenever you look up, the thing like comes a little closer and then backs up, and you're going to say, who is that?
I don't know if it'll do that, although I assume it could be, you know, there are ones that it can be programmed to do that. But you can give it waypoints. I could tell it, okay, within a mile or a mile and a half of my house, here are the waypoints I want you to hit. It'll fly to those waypoints.
Hey, we got to go to break, but Mike just texted in. He wants you to comment a bit on after the break on where you think Putin is on the desperation meter. S&P futures down 12. Nasdaq futures just flew up. They're actually up 50 cents. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Jackson, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamara Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 12. NASDAQ futures are unchanged on the day so far. Dow futures down 110. Individual stocks, we got Goldman Sachs down 265. It's most of it. We've got Apple down 217. They got earnings are tonight, I believe. Nike down 122. So those are the stocks that are movers in the Dow so far. So nothing crazy. We just had a big turnaround after we were up before the Fed news conference, and pretty much up most of the way during the news conference, a little up and down on every comment, and then at the end we pretty much headed south. DAX down 124.8%, FTSE down 65.8%, CAC around down 69.9%. So say moderately down over in Europe, nothing crazy, but everybody's down almost 1%. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 34, let's call that one flat. Wait a minute, they're closed today, so let's not call that one anything. The Hang Seng is open, they're up 249, 1.2%, and the Shanghai is open after the last time they were open was last Friday, but they are open now. They're up 27 points, 0.8%, but that's essentially a four-day catch-up, so whatever that causes you to think. Yesterday, Dow was down 270, S&P down 28. We have the bonds. They're up down 5 basis points, 3.34, which is low. The Bund up 1, 2.26. Japan up 2, 0.42. We've got oil, which has been getting clobbered. It's down a little bit again, down 24 cents, still under 70. 68.36, Brent up 2 cents, 72.35, natural gas unchanged at 217, RBOB unchanged at 231. We had gold rallying again today, up 15 bucks, 2052, maybe on its way to 2100, we will see. That's 0.7%, silver up almost 30 cents, that's over 1%, 25.97, copper up 2 cents, 387. I'd like those two to keep going, it would be a nice week for a lot of my clients. Bitcoin up 855 over 29,000, 29,214. The U.S. dollar virtually unchanged, down very slightly against the euro is over 110, 110.7, and the British pound is 125, almost 126. So dollar continues to sneak down a little bit. Andrew, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
All right, it is 6:38 here in Chicago. Starting off with some sports over to the. Or some baseball. The Cubs lost yesterday to the Nationals, ending their game 1-2. While the White Sox won, winning over the Twins, ending their game 6-4. And over the Diamondbacks, they won over the Rangers 12-7. Now over to Chicago weather. It's currently 40 degrees right now. Going to have a sweet, sweet high of 70 today, so that's going to be very nice. And over in Phoenix, things are at 64 right now, and they're going to have a high of 79 today. I feel like that's the lowest I've seen it there.
Yeah, they were almost 100 or 100 the other day, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Yeah, exactly. They were 99, I think. With that, over to Chicago traffic. Thankfully, no major accidents to report. The inbound expressways are looking pretty clogged up right now, especially coming in from the north side. And something to note over here is on Lakeshore Drive, a couple entrance and exit ramps are closed. But I can't, for the life of me, find out why. I'm trying doing the research, and it was like saying they're not going to be closed. But this traffic update here is saying that they are. So maybe look out for some closed exits on Lakeshore Drive.
God. Well, yeah. Well, they're doing stuff for that crazy race.
Is that it? Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought. And then it was like, literally, all these articles were like, no, despite what you think, it's not going to be closed. And I'm like,
yeah, right.
Well,
right.
It is.
Well,
so
they're putting in, they replace some of the concrete for the end of the race or something. Lou, this is, you know, I'm going to say that the people who are concerned about Chicago government right now, the word that is at the top of the chain has to be incompetence at every level. They don't seem to talk to each other. They don't seem to have any idea. They signed a contract to do this race, and like a couple of months later, they said, "Oh yeah, well by the way, we can't have any softball in Grant Park all summer." And, oh, by the way, the Taste of Chicago is like the same weekend. We got to move that or cancel it. Then I think a couple of the jazz or blues things. I mean, we forgot about those. So, I mean, it's absolute incompetence at every level.
Is this a Grand Prix type thing?
Yeah, you got to make a bunch of turns. Yeah, it must be the same thing they had in Detroit for a while.
Yeah. This is, I'm sorry, Tom. I'm just going to say this point blank. You guys in Chicago have the government you deserve. You have the government you voted for. I'm sorry. The fact that you elected a crypto Marxist mayor whose greatest claim as a school teacher, as a member of the teachers union there, and as a school teacher, he never failed anybody, is enough for me. I mean, along with everything else going on there, the guy who, when you get a rampaging mob of teenagers, mostly boys, racing through the streets, breaking windows, vandalizing cars, robbing people, and generally creating mayhem. And he says, yeah, well, it was a bad event, but we can't really blame the teenagers.
Yeah, I don't know what... I really don't know what's gonna happen with all this, Lou. I mean, I'm very sad because I've never left the city. I've always loved the city. I like to be somewhat of a historian. I'm nothing like John is or John Flanagan in terms of that, but I ran into a guy last night, and I run into people that, I don't know, everybody talks to me for whatever reason. And I ran into a guy, he's a, you know, sort of, I won't say a buddy, because he's a guy I see over at the health club, and once in a while I see him in the downstairs in the bar in the building here. And he says to me, I can't wait to get out of Chicago. And I said, okay. He goes, I never thought I'd be saying this. He goes, but this, you know, I know what he meant, but he said, this leadership is so screwed up. He says, they have no idea what they're doing. He goes, now the latest is we're going to put low-income housing downtown. At the same time, we're going to try and attract business. We're going to make downtown the new Cabrini Green. At the same time, we try and get people here to pay taxes. He goes, how stupid are these people?
Well, we go back to, first of all, the definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, coupled with the strong ideological bent of the people that are running this. And you know, and ideologues, when confronted with reality that's inconsistent with the ideology, simply double down.
But this is not something that you can put on black people. This is some other ideology that has nothing. I mean, Karen Reeves was on the show a couple times, and Karen has spent her whole life, she's had, you know, various jobs, but her whole life basically has been trying to help people out. Now, she's not a community activist in the sense that some of these people are at least trying to get money and shove it around, mostly to them. But her motivation always was, from what I remember twice for an hour both times, her motivation always was to find somebody down on his luck, maybe didn't have the right education, maybe, you know, probably was black, maybe wasn't. I don't think that was a prerequisite. And her point was to get some kind of a program together where at the end of a year, the education and the training was to the point where this person could get a job, be on their own, have a family, join what you and I used to think was the American way. Her intention was never to have a permanent underclass of people where we just show them different ways to get into different programs so they never have to do anything. I mean, she clearly is not part of this mentality. So you can't paint everybody of a certain color the same brush, and I would never. I'm not saying you are, but I'm saying this has. And there's a lot of you know, my very liberal white friends, Caucasian friends, they're all on board with this. God, this slavery was awful. Whatever it takes, we shouldn't have all this money. We stole it. We should just like give it all back. And I mean, wait a minute. Does anybody ever have to have a job? Some point, does anybody? But there's a certain dignity in doing some work for somebody, seeing some progress. Everybody forgets all about this, Lou. I mean, the guys at Pullman, you know, there were all kinds of people, all kinds of colors, all kinds of background. At the end of the day, when they saw a really sharp-looking railroad car go out the door, there's some satisfaction in that. There's some satisfaction in going to work, doing something, having your business progress. Whatever it is, if you're making widgets, the widgets are good, and if other people use the widgets, they have. There's a mentality to this that somehow or another, these people don't have any idea of that they're.
The ideological response to that is that the system is rigged, and therefore we have to tear down and take down the system. That's why this stuff is. I refer to this as crypto Marxism.
But there's you and I can sit, Lou. I mean, and we could, on a blackboard, show my age. We could say that yes, every system is sort of rigged a little bit toward the people.
Well, every system except a coerced system,
right,
produces unequal results because people's talents are different, people's motivations are different, and the goal in our culture, anyway, is to provide incentives to encourage the positive behaviors that we want that will get people in a position to help themselves.
But we also see at the upper level, which you and I maybe wouldn't consider the upper level, we see people like, God, who is the treasurer that wrote a book about himself, Geithner or whatever? We also see people at the upper end that really were born on third and thought they hit a triple, and you see these people getting the Hunter Bidens of the world, the Trump's kids of the world. I mean, I can understand why people sit there and go, really? I mean, there was an article here today I want to talk to you about. How about the Google chairman, while he's laying people off right and left, made $227 million last year? And there's a lot wrong, Lou, that you and I have talked about in a lot of ways. But there is something about you being self-sufficient, not having to, rather than this permanent upper, where you constantly say those people got their money, every single one of them got it ill-gotten. By the way, they owe it to me because somehow I don't have it. So for the rest that's a whole different program than you and I are talking about. I'm just real quick. I'm sorry, I'm talking. Yeah. There's a lot of bad stuff you and I could address. I mean, the idea that Commonwealth Edison is fat and happy here, and four of their employees just kind of convicted of a felony, and the company didn't. I'm apoplectic on how that all works. I mean, I can't imagine that they're still, and they got another rate increase in there. I mean, it never ends. And yet, they're so big, it doesn't seem to matter. You can't spank them, Lou. They're too big. And yet, I understand how people look at that and say, what the hell? We need a leader that can stand up to these people. We need
Let me go back. Run out of breath here. You've run about 15 topics through there. Let me start with the most basic one.
Well, you know what, though, Lou? They're all the same topic.
Well, sort of.
Yeah.
I find it amazing that in a community that has such a strong biblical and historically Christian outlook, and that's the African American community. And there's no question about this. This is something that every poll, every survey connects with. Within that community, with that strong pastoral leadership and outlook, that this basic lesson of the New Testament, and when I say basic, it comes out of one of Paul's letters, I can't remember which one, but Paul writes about the value of labor and the dignifying aspects of working and you know, holding a job and you know, providing stability for yourself and the people around you. And that's a fundamental lesson that goes back more than 2,000 years. And so, you know, it is a surprise to me that aspect gets lost in the sort of the handout mentality that you see dominating a lot of at least in the mainstream press, dominates a lot of the discussion about race relations.
Well, the mix between the new religion, okay, and you're right about historically the Martin Luther King Baptist Church in Alabama. That's not the same deal. A lot of these guys got nothing but dough. I mean, they're one of the guys you play golf.
Oh, even to the point of what's his face, Father Flager in Chicago. Is he still around?
Oh yeah, he doesn't have any money. But he's not the guy. This Johnson guy, a new mayor, he left his spot at the county board. Some guy who's one, a preacher, is applied to take his spot. He's a community activist slash preacher, whatever the hell that all is. And, you know, constantly dabbling in other people's money, and now he wants that spot. You can bitch and moan all you want about the Catholic Church, but I never once had they never wanted to be in government. I mean, the pastor of the church never said, "I think I'll be the alderman." I mean, it never crossed his mind.
For a couple of hundred years, the Catholic Church was the government.
Well, but I'm saying right now, that my point is, it's almost like the Muslims are doing in some of these places. The church takes over. These the people who are all in the in this guy's cabinet coming in, was as Greg wrote, and not except for maybe the general counsel, none of them have ever really had a job of any consequence.
No.
A community activist, yeah. That's considered training for mayor, and that's considered a job. Well, in my mind, it's not.
No. But you know, you're gonna find out.
I think we already have found out, and so many people are leaving.
Let me throw the sports angle in that I like to throw in on each show, and this goes right to the heart of what you're talking about. So the Bears, you know, are gonna move. So
not anymore. Not since the guy raised the tax.
That's exactly my point. Yeah. So what does Cook County do? Magically. They raise the property tax value of just the land that they want to purchase out in Arlington and are jacking that price up.
Oh, no, they already purchased it.
Well, before they engage in any construction.
Well, Lou, this is what the Bears want. If you go buy a house that somebody bought in 1850, it's now worth a bunch, and you go pay $5 million for it, you're going to get reassessed. The Bears don't want to be reassessed. They want that most of that land out there. I don't know if you've ever been to Arlington Park. The clubhouse and the parking lot is on. It's got to be 1/10 of the property. The rest of it is they have another track behind the track. It goes all the way out to, was it Route 53? There's not even sewer and water. It is undeveloped property. It's just,
yeah,
it's, and so it, it
so
was.
Why,
it,
so why is its value being jumped six times?
Because they just
construction even starts.
Because it was valued at $33 million, and they just paid $170 for it. Why shouldn't it be $170 like everybody else?
I don't think that's gonna fly.
Why?
But this looks to me like just a straight, you know, shoot down.
Okay, but I'm saying your house was valued when you bought it. It was $50,000. Now it's $3 million. Guess what? The next guy has to suck on the $3 million. Nobody wants to do that. But how do you think these rates go up? For God's sake, they go up on market value.
I think this is the good old Cook County fix going in.
The Bears want all kinds of money from the state. They want all kinds of money from Arlington Heights. See what you're missing. See, now even you can miss one. I think. What the hell? Andrew, see if you can find this, please. I think the Bears wanted a 10 or 15-year... They went to the state. They wanted a 10 or 15-year hold on the property taxes at the $33 million number. And somebody said, basically, screw you guys on that. So they're the ones that pushed this out there, saying, despite the fact that we paid 100 and some million for the place, we want the $33 million not only this year, but for the next, like, 10 or 20. I think they pushed it a little too hard, Lou. And they got it back in their face. Now they're out.
I'm not going to defend. You know, the Bears trying to get the locality to pay for this thing. My point is, go ahead, do that. Jack the rate up. Make it impossible for them to get the stadium. This is why nobody wants to do business with Chicago.
Well, but why should we give them anything for the stadium? Well,
because they're going to move the team.
Go.
And I think that's where that ends up.
Go. I would say if you go to the people in Jacksonville and you say, guess what? We got this pretty nice stadium here. Bears have made $100-some million a year as a messed up family, and we'll charge you $6 million a year for the rent. I think Jacksonville's here tomorrow.
Yeah, Well, I don't know. I don't know. I think the word goes out. I mean, there's only 32, well, 31 club owners. I think the word goes out to those 30 guys saying you really don't want to be in Chicago.
Well, because you only make $120 million a year for a $6 million rent. Yeah, that's not enough.
But no, it's that the government there is so politically unstable that you cannot, as a business person, rely on anything they tell you.
Well, I'm going to say that how come you picked up on this thing and you didn't pick up on the Bears trying to freeze the tax rate for two decades, or it was a decade, or whatever it was?
Yeah, I mean, that's a deal. I mean,
nobody, how is it? I mean, I know I have this discussion with my buddies all the time over a cold one. Why do they think, just because they're Bear fans, why should they get anything? If you came in and you ran for mayor or something, and all of a sudden you bought some huge house and got some deal where your tax wasn't going to go up for 10 years, everybody'd be outraged. Why all of a sudden, if it's the Bears, they deserve it? I mean, what are we doing here?
No, I hear you. Yeah.
Well, I mean, last night our bar tab was whatever, $200 over at the Siri. We had a bunch of people. I'm going to say we paid a dollar, whatever it is, half of 1%. We paid a dollar for paying off White Sox Park. Why? Do you think anybody in that place even knows they pay half of 1% tax for White Sox Park every time they have a drink or a lunch?
I doubt it. I doubt it gets publicized.
Yeah.
I'm not. You're not going to get any arguments from me that. You know, these cities subsidize to a ridiculous extent the presence of sports teams there. But you and I've had this discussion many times about no mayor wants to be the mayor that loses the professional sports franchise.
There's always a tipping point. What's the number? I mean, yeah. I mean, let's put it, you and I know that if somebody wanted to come to Chicago and you know, had some nice business or something like that, and they were going to put up a place on, you know, God knows where, 72nd Street. And they said, you know, the only thing is, well, there's only exits on the Ryan. It's 60th and 80th. You know, there happen to be more, but I'm just making an example. You and I would find a way to say, well, God, if you're going to have 5,000 people working there, we'll find a way to get you an exit. And, oh, by the way, it looks like there's an L that runs right by there. There's no stop there. We'll give you an L. That's just good government. That's servicing your population, though. That's a lot different than saying, oh man, we're gonna not charge you state taxes. We're gonna rebate to you the state taxes that your people pay. Meanwhile, you and I are next door to the thing, going, wait a minute, what kind of deal? There's place you can go, and I'm saying you and I probably would stop before other people think. Right now, if you don't ask, you don't get, right? And a lot of people are tired of it. Just like this Google guy's salary when they're laying people off. They're not going to get anywhere with it, but, I mean, there's limits to this. We all know that government steals a little bit. Lou, if I'm going to say in World War II, the guy who made the PT boat motors in Buffalo, New York, wherever the hell he was, probably charged 5 to 10% more than he should have. You know what? The money was spent in the saloons and restaurants and homes in Buffalo. It's not bad. But when it gets to 50, 60, 70, now you and I got a problem with it, right? Where's the number? I don't know. But somewhere, so, you know.
So let me, before we punch out of here, let me give your respond to the reader's question about Vladimir Putin's mental state.
Yeah.
A lot, I think, is going to depend on what happens with this so-called spring offensive that the Ukrainians are planning to engage in. And what you're seeing, by the way, these attacks across Russia, and there have been a number of sabotage-type incidents across Russia in the last 5 or 6 days, you're seeing them prepare the battlefield here. They're in the process of trying to divert Russian attention from where they're gonna make their assault. I think if that assault goes well and they drive a cut between Crimea and the rest of the Russian-occupied territory, I think if they make the Russians look bad, I think you will see a significant upgrade in responses, you know, terror attacks, logistics attacks by the Russians against Ukraine using their strategic forces. I don't I don't think he's going to drop a nuke there because I think that would be, he realizes that would be suicidal, but they are going to push up the intensity of their attacks against Ukraine and further work to bring that population to its knees. I don't think he crosses the nuclear fire break. That would be a,
well, Lou, they did
major escalation.
They did end up turn tail and run like we did in Afghanistan. If they start losing here and it becomes just another 2-year quagmire, and
this is completely different.
Well, it is, but if it was supposed to be, you know, the 6-week war too.
Their view of Ukraine is completely different. Afghanistan was an invasion of what they refer to as the near abroad, and they think it was in their sphere of influence, but not part of their country. They view Ukraine as part of Russia. This is a civil war.
Well, then why did they ever let it go?
Because the West conspired against them using a weak president who was in the pocket of the West and who was already a failing alcoholic, and the West took advantage of the Russians just like the West always does, and broke Ukrainian off because it was a hotbed of dissent, Nazis and drug dealers.
I'm going to say, Lou,
that's the theme.
I'm going to say that you could go through the history of the Louisiana Purchase, and you would say we stole that from the French because they weren't supposed to be able to sell it to us, and you could probably make a legal case that it really belongs to Spain, and yet what good does that do? I mean, the Mexicans can say we stole the Gadsden Purchase, but it's 100 years, it's 50 years, Lou. At some point, you got to let it alone.
It's
my logic, not his, obviously.
That's not his.
No.
But the answer to the question is how soon before he gets desperate? I think a lot of it's going to hinge on what happens with the Ukrainian offensive.
What's your read on his health? Guys are sending me stuff that he's on, you know, 15 prescription drugs a day. Is any of that true? Or does anybody even know?
I mean, I don't know. He looks puffy, but you know, he's getting older. We all look puffy.
Yeah.
I don't have any specific, evidence. I mean, he was supposed to be dead of cancer or heart disease or what, like this 6 months ago. I don't credit those reports.
All right, bud. Thank you very much. Good stuff as usual. SP Futures down 16. NASDAQ Futures down 15. One of our listeners says I should just leave Chicago like everybody else. I don't know. I can't do that, Lou. I can't do it. We'll be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2222. 2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allender on the board. I don't know when this song has ever been more appropriate. It's from a long time ago. S&P futures down 15, NASDAQ futures down 15. Do we have Mr. Dan?
Yes.
Well, Mr. Dan, we solved all the problems of the Russian-Ukrainian world. Now you can help us solve all the problems here.
Okay, terrific.
So Andrew was taking notes. I had no idea. I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting because you're obviously a bright dude. When you heard the thing about the drones going into allegedly from Ukraine to Russia. What was your perception of how far they could come from?
I don't really have a good read on that. I mean, I know that the technology is allowing them to, you know, go further and further, but I don't have, like, in terms of miles or whatever, I don't necessarily have a good read on that. But I do know that there's a lot of concern that, you know, with the use of drones, not only in the Ukraine, you know, from Russians in the Ukraine, but, you know, potentially from the Chinese here, and then not necessarily coming from China, but coming from other places. And then even, you know, I know when some companies or some investors are looking to do research, they're now using drones as a way of scoping out, you know, whether it be property or you know, a company or so. Yeah, there's certainly the rationale for using them has really expanded. But in terms of like knowing, I don't really have off the top of my head a number of miles or a range that they.
Well, I'll bet because I thought, gee, first thing I thought it was, man, how far is it from the closest part in Ukraine to Moscow? I got to believe that I'm not the only one who's such a dunderhead who felt that way. And Lou goes, no, they had to be come from like a suburb of Moscow. I mean, it's somebody had to sneak them in there, and either was, you know, got Russian people don't like Putin or Ukrainians that smuggled them in there and launched them. I mean, there's no way these things are making them all the way. Well, I mean, I guess there's probably some that could make it that far, but not the ones that they were using, and probably were fireworks more than anything else. But, I mean, it is scary when you have this perception. In Chicago, they actually have, it must be Cook County or the state. Audrey uses a guy when she, you know, obviously when she lists a home,
in
the real estate agent, she goes out and has really good people do the pictures. Well, if it's a big enough piece of property, she has a guy with a drone, and they take pics. Yeah. But the weird part is the drone cannot be over a main road. And it also I don't think can be over somebody else's property. So I mean, she has to make sure, like if she's taking a picture of her place, she borders 151st, which is considered, you know, a main street. The guy was telling me, he goes, oh no, this thing can't be over 151st. If they see it there, the police are outraged because something goes wrong and you want to land on somebody's car. You know, so I mean, there are rules with these things.
I'm gonna have to let my neighbors know who have pools that they're gonna have to be properly clothed when they're.
Well, I was thinking of coming down and find out where you live and they have one of those little ones, and when you're out by the backyard cutting the grass, whatever, the thing zeroes in and you know, see how you like it. Anyway, all kinds of news yesterday.
We have gold
sneaking up like you thought it would. The dollar still is creeping down a little bit, although not horrible today. Well, now it is. Now it's coming down a little bit more. Where do you land on all this? I don't know if these guys even to this day recognize the stand they've gotten themselves in, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the good news is that the 25 basis point hike was consensus, so they didn't do anything that was, you know, I do give Powell credit for just kind of, you know, sticking to what consensus is, meaning consensus economics and economists and all that. So there were no surprises. And the language was a little different in listening to his remarks after the announcement. And in the language, you know, you could really interpret it in a number of different ways, but it, you know, I guess the most basic interpretation is that there's, like, you know, this likelihood there could be a pause, but they want to wait to continue to see what happens. Now, the interesting thing, he did hit on a really good point. We still have robust job growth. The, you know, we have low unemployment. The labor market is still very tight. I don't know what it's like there in Chicago, but I was away for the weekend hiking up in Asheville, and every place we ate was understaffed. So we don't have that issue here in Florida so much, but I still think the issue of mismatch between labor and, you know, like people who are looking for helpers and people who are willing to work hasn't happened. And until it happens, we're going to continue to have this upward pressure on inflation. Then there was also the question about inflation, because I heard a few different people interpret it differently. Well, my interpretation is we still have inflation, and there's still a ways to go before it's going to come down. We are, you know, it's pretty much consensus that we're going to see slower growth. And as you mentioned, the dollar is weakening, and that's why we wanted to keep positions in gold and silver, since they've had a nice rally. Again, that is a nice hedge against what's happening here. But something else that's happening that concerns me is the bank failures, and the fact that the list keeps growing, and these aren't small banks. I mean, PacWest is not a small bank. And the concern impacts some of the micro cap and small cap names that we've owned, and that there's a belief that some of these companies are going to have a tough time getting funding. So the issue isn't that these companies aren't doing well and don't have a huge amount of upside and are in the right industries or right management teams. It's just that the funding could become an issue as credit gets tighter. So that's absolutely a concern. That's definitely having an impact on some of the stock prices of the companies that we own. We had talked about a company called Westwater Resources, which owns a graphite mill, you know, that the graphite being used for electric vehicles. They, the only one in the United States. And
what's the symbol on that, Dan?
WWR. But the stock price was up almost 30% yesterday, and we used that as an opportunity to get out. Because when I talked to the CFO last week, I was asking him, you know, so the stock price had sold off, and he said they definitely know that part of the reason is the concerns about these bank failures. And the bank failures will have an impact on smaller companies, startup companies, some friends that have a startup on the West Coast had their money with Silicon Bank, actually, and they've really run into problems with their growth strategy. So I would say that the companies aren't going to fail, and they're still in good industries, and I would include Richardson Electronics in that, but I don't think we're going to see any major upside, because I think that growth is going to be stymied. I think we're going to have sort of a cap on the upside, on the growth side. At the same time, we're getting a lot of yield. So if you want to be safe, which I think, you know, on the short end, we were buying June 15th T-bills yesterday at 5.42.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do have an advantage because we trade institutionally, so we get a better pricing. But that's, you know, that's a pretty good place to park some cash until we can figure out what's going on. And in our strategy, we do homework on all the high yield bonds that we own, and you know, several have done very well. Boston Partners, and here's another good example of the concern out there for commercial real estate, but there are exceptions, and this is why we do our homework. And Boston Partners own what they call premier properties. So in the Boston area, for example, they own the Seaport area, which is really up and coming. They're not having any trouble in the office space. They're getting, you know, some of the tech firms are moving out of the space, but they have like law firms that are ready to move in. And there are people getting back to work. That trend is happening. So that's an example of a bond that matures on September 1st. I mentioned it once before. The coupon is only 3 1/8, but at one point we were buying them at 7, 7.5%, and that spread has come in. But it's just an example that if you do your homework, there's some good opportunities for some good yield. And why take the risk with what's going on in the equity market, especially the smaller cap names, when you can lock in a nice 7% short-term yield? So I think the big issue is still getting price stability in. I do think Powell mentioned that. He did say that, although people interpreted this differently, but he did say it's going to, getting inflation down is going to be a long process. I have more confidence in him than I have in the past, and I know a lot of people are saying that it's been overdone, and we may find that out, but I have a good sense that they're going to pause in here going forward and see how these changes are impacting the economy. Again, I don't think they have all the answers. I really think there has to be a shift in employees' mentality or workers' mentality. These people who got used to working from home and used to getting a paycheck really at some point have to realize they have to get back out there and work. Unfortunately, the people who are hardest hit are the workers that are in the lower, obviously the lower income levels, that are still dealing with the higher food prices and, you know, their utility bills and all that that have gone up. So this is going to be an interesting period going forward. But I would say this is a time, and we have made the shift to stay relatively conservative. Could be more bank failures. There could be continued tightening of credit. Don't see what everyone is calling a recession, but I do see slow growth.
We're kind of ranting all week, Dan. I sort of hell want to do it with you, but I don't understand how we totally changed this banking business. We totally lured people into a bizarre world where nobody ever got any payment for any money they dropped any place off. We got rid of the difference between M1 and M2. We got rid of the reserve requirements, and for, I'm going to say, a decade, all a bank had to do was take money in for people, do their level best to give them overcharge fees and ATM fees, and essentially give people a negative interest rate, and they were basically lulled into, this is going to be it forever, where banks don't do car loans anymore, they don't do this, half of them don't have loan officers at some of these places. I mean, it seems like they just bring the money to the Fed overnight, even though you're making 1, 1.25%, you're not paying anything, or maybe you're getting negative. This is the future of banking. And oh, by the way, we're going to load up on these federal bonds. And now, to me, it's very simple why these guys are losing deposits. Everybody else is paying interest, and they're not.
Right.
I mean, duh. I mean,
you're exactly right. It's there's this huge disparity now, right? And it's been there gradually growing over the past year, and you still see Interactive. Brokers who we use to custody most of our clients' accounts does pay a really good amount. They pay 4.3% in cash, but if you look at the like the Fidelities and Merrills and trades, they're paying nothing. So it's for people who are in, like, even if they're in a personal account doing a personal trading account, and they say, hey, this is the time to get a little more conservative, they don't have they're not getting paid much unless they're in, say, an brokers account or in a strategy like yours or ours, where we're protecting their principal. And I think this is a protect your principal environment. Go for the yield and lighten up on the high risk, the high beta, the high risk stocks.
Well, we shouldn't have a system that goes down because people think that you should pay them a little something for using their capital. isn't that the way of the world? It has been for thousands of years.
But I just think that, since we've been around a little longer, we have history, we know what it was like. We know what it was like in the early 80s and the late 70s. We know, and I think having lived through that really helps us, at this point in terms of not only being able to give advice, but knowing how to invest in this environment. Because for the longest time, people just look at what's happened since we've kind of had no, like you're saying, no interest on bank accounts, most people have just forgotten that there's an opportunity to, you know, to make a little money in your savings account or your. But you're right; they're not even the banks aren't even offering that. I think I saw my Bank of America statement, and I got 12 cents for the last month, and then I'm looking at my Interactive Brokers account, thinking, you know, that's where most of the cash is going. And a number of my clients, we've set up these cash alternative funds where they're, you know, we're buying predominantly T-bills, and then we're also buying some of the, you know, triple B, you know, investment grade and credit where we're getting, you know, 6-7%, 7%. So, you know, your average yield is close to 7, and it's, in this environment, that's pretty good. And then you're not having, you know, you can sleep at night. Yeah. You don't have to worry about everything
We're going to the auction every Monday morning. For people, for T-bill.
Yeah, and it's the 3 month, you know, the 3 month T-bill is looking really attractive. The reason I recommend those short term, because I think some people say, hey, I want to lock in this rate because I don't know if it's going to be there. The reason I recommend it for us as investors is we want to see what happens in 3 months. That gives us some breathing room. And in 3 months, some of these bonds that are yielding 7% could be yielding 9%. So maybe we move from the treasuries into some of the corporates. Also, munis are looking very attractive. There's, you know, the tax-exempt yield. I was able to buy some municipal bonds at 5% for a one-year bond, one-and-a-half-year bond. And that's very attractive. You know, the taxable equivalent yield, if you will, and you include the state on that, would come out to about 8.5%. So that's pretty good for a AA-rated.
Yeah, we had a line on some, I don't know if they were 1 year or 2 year left on some O'Hare runway bonds or something, but then it turned out we weren't able to get them. We tried with something with O'Hare. I don't know if it was runway or what the hell it was. But then, yeah, this is a kind of an interesting world. There was one of the representatives, I don't know where the guy's from, his name was Kennedy. I think he might be from Louisiana. I don't think he's part of the Kennedy family, but he was ranting yesterday. The first time I've heard anybody from the Senate or the House sound like they knew what they're talking about. The guy said, we've got $600 billion worth of bonds out there, of our bonds that are hopelessly underwater. I mean, why are we having a problem thinking that there's an issue? we're the ones that sold them to everybody. I mean, we're the ones who did it.
No, that was going to be the other point I was going to make, is that the debt ceiling issue hasn't been resolved. So the combination of the debt ceiling issue with the bank failures is not a good one. And that's you know, and I hear you on that. I'm definitely, there are some challenges. What's really been interesting, though, is because when you look at the high-yield bond market, it has a benchmark spread, and that is just the difference between the yield on the high-yield bond and the yield on a comparable treasury. And the average spread's about 480 historically. Now it's at about 465, so it's just a tad bit lower than the average. But there are people out there saying it's too low. In other words, you're not getting paid to take that risk because the defaults are picking up. But what these people don't realize is a lot of these companies are much better capitalized now, and they're much better positioned to deal with this environment coming up, because these companies have memory and they remember what's happened. You know, they remember what happened in 08. It wasn't that long ago.
Well, some do. Some
do, exactly. Some do. The newer companies I'm more concerned about, and that's why we tend to, you know, because our client base tends to be retirement age, close to retirement or shortly after. For the younger people who have a longer time horizon, there's going to be some good buying opportunities in here. But for somebody who's looking at retiring, there's no reason to be taking extra risk. You can get that in the bond market. You get that in your strategy. You want to be in a protective strategy right now.
Well, Dan, I think that the people you talk to, they're the everyman of the world, and I think there's less of them around. There's surely going to be some less banks, but I think those guys are going to sit there and say, this doesn't look so hot. Maybe going forward, we're going to make sure we have a little nest egg here. I don't think the United Airlines of the world, the people like that, that every single dime they either pay out in salaries to people, I don't think they've decided. They'll buy stock back tomorrow rather than pay cash for a plane. They'll do that forever. They haven't changed a bit because they know if something happens again, they get bailed out again.
That's you're exactly right, and that's really the hopefully that's not the way that individuals feel right now, because individuals also just got bailed out pretty substantially. So if they decide to start a business, they're thinking, oh, if we have another COVID bailed out, and that would really not be a good environment for us. And you're right, with certain companies, certainly the airlines and the banks to a certain degree.
Yeah, whatever, a huge extent, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, two questions. One, what do you think about going back to having demand deposits and time deposits? I mean, whoever decided that there should be no barrier there, I don't think that experiment's working out so hot at all, do you?
I agree with you, yeah. I don't think so. Yeah, the bank, there has to be some revamping of the deposit system, and there has to be certainly some closer. Banks need to pay more attention to who's managing their general account and their reserve. There's for the average fixed income manager, and I've been doing fixed income for 38 years now, but for the average fixed income manager, just, you know, duration matching is a very simple thing. So, you know, the part of the problem is, I think there, you know, a lot of people took their eye off the ball, and that you have to stay on top of things. You know, I mean, we have to stay on top of things every day in our business because things can change very quickly. And that's really what we get paid for, is to be paying attention to the market while our clients are off doing what they do or you know, retired. That's our job, is to be paying attention. And it's the bank, you know, anybody who manages money, including the people who manage the bank's deposits, need to be paying attention on a daily basis. I mean, right now, you can see these whipsaws in the T-bill rates. I mean, you can actually make money trading T-bills.
That's scary, isn't it? That is really scary.
Scary, yeah.
I mean, those
things are kind of fun, though. I mean, it's just but it is scary. You're right.
Well, you look at what is going on. I mean, these people make these determinations. The idea of going to zero reserve requirements. What moron thought that? What moron thought that up? Really? I mean, what is the purpose of that? I mean, I don't. And you know what's interesting, Dan? I want your view, because you've been closer to these banks than most. When I say closer, you've worked in all these different areas. The idea, I mean, I run into people, in the library, and they'll say, man, why would you have your money over $250,000 in a bank? Dan, correct me if I'm wrong. You go back to when you and I were pups in the business, when I worked for Pullman. The thought that you put $1 million payroll in there on a Thursday and it wasn't good in a bank till Friday, the $100,000 FDIC insurance or FSLIC insurance are now up to 250. That was opiate for the morons. Everybody's the Fed's job is to make the entire system whole. No matter who you were, whether it was 30 million, 50 million, if you had a payroll for, God knows who, Lockheed or something during the war, it had to be good. The idea that anything over 250, your grandma is supposed to be in there going over the guy's loan portfolio to see if she wants to leave it in there, that's insanity. And everybody talks about it today, like you should be aware of your bank over 250. No, you shouldn't. That's the Fed's job. Or where am I wrong here?
You aren't wrong. It is the bank's job. We're in total agreement there, and that's a fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have individuals fearing putting money in banks. But what is interesting, Tom, is just the alternatives that have popped up. I mean, we're doing this cash management account, like I mentioned, which, is yielding around 6 or 7%. So you can do it with T-bills and with, shorter-term bonds, both munis and corporates. But you can also do it. I mentioned a company, One Main Financial, that used to do credit. They used to provide loans for autos, for homes, and all that. And I may have mentioned that a few weeks ago, I went into one of their locations close to here, and they just said, we're doing great. The people who we cater to are people that are having trouble, personal loans, but people who are having trouble, we've gotten out of all of the other areas. This is what they told me, because they weren't profitable. This used to be the consumer, One Main Financial was the consumer finance division of Citibank.
Okay.
So it was, they know how to bank. And again, those bonds, 6 1/8 of March 15th, 24, One Main Financial, OMF, 6 1/8 of 3/15/24, yielding about 8.5% for less than a year. And that's a company I have a lot of confidence in, because they are benefiting from this tightening of credit and the bank issues, because they're not a bank.
Well, the regular people never benefited on the loan side, except for maybe a mortgage, by this, all with all the Fed did for all these other people. I mean, your credit card rate never came down. What do you suppose when Audrey just bought her car, the guy there, she knows the guy forever. He said they now have a loan department, not just for new and used cars, but they have a separate department for repairs. Can you imagine what the interest rate is on? I mean, I don't know how high it is, but I'm guessing it's not 2% for a repair. It's probably 10, maybe more. I don't know.
Wish if I could have any impact on the what do you call it, the curriculum at schools, public schools, private schools, is a class in personal finance, because I think so many people would benefit. I've taught at the college level, but I think it needs to start happening in grade school. I think people, I think it needs to be, this is like a real world experience, and I think it would help a lot of people who aren't necessarily inclined to, towards money or towards finances, to at least have a better understanding of how it works, because it's really crazy how many people don't understand when they take on that 20-25% credit card that it's going to be tough to get out of it.
Well, I mean, most people don't ever think they're going to have a balance, but one of my good friends, his wife was in Northwestern last week for a day of tests, a bunch of tests. Well, the tab is 17 grand. Now, what they did to this lady, giving her tests, they came up to 17 grand in a 4-hour stay, I have no idea. But, we could start there. Well, he's got a Blue Cross thing where he has to pay 20%. So he's, he's $4,500.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I got to believe it's going on a credit card. Right, imagine the guy being able to write a check for that. So okay, now he's up to 25%, and probably since it's a sudden dash on there, who knows, they might raise his rate. I mean, this happens dramatically. I mean, we have this inflation. I know we're running over here a little bit, but I ask you kind of one thing. You mentioned a bunch of times regarding, can they work the rate down? I haven't read every word, but I can only think of really one time that I've read about, Dan, where the government was able to decrease the price level while we were actually growing, and it was probably the 10 years after the Civil War, as they dragged dragged greenbacks out of the system and actually lowered the money supply so they could get on back on the gold standard at the same time the economy was booming with all the inventions that came from the war, which there were a lot of them in the Civil War. I don't see, matter of fact, how's this for an explanation? One of the ladies who listens from Arizona wrote, says, I really don't understand what you're talking about, this inflation versus price level. So I said, look at it this way. You got somebody who should be doing 2,000 calories a day, and they decide to go on a beer binge for a year, and they do 3,000. At the end of the year, they're up 5 pounds a month, so they're up 60 pounds, and all of a sudden they say, okay, I'm going back to 2,000 calories a year. Well, now you don't have any inflation anymore, but you're a big fatso. I mean, and that's kind of, I think, where we are.
That's actually a good analogy, because I think it tells a story. That's a really good analogy.
Because right now, I think the inflation has tamed some, matter of fact, quite a bit. But
the price level,
level is stuff that people can't handle.
Right.
Absolutely can't handle. And when you talk about the wage stuff, especially in the restaurant industry, we're talking about since 2000, those people, which I never should use that phrase, but I do, those people maybe got a raise in 20 years from $10 to 11 or 12. Now all of a sudden they're saying, hey, I need 25 or 22.
Yeah, Tom, you're right on the money. That's exactly what's happened.
And
once you've given that raise, it's really hard to go backwards, especially when you're still paying a higher cost of, housing or,
right,
your rent or your utilities or your food at the grocery store. So it's hard. That's a very hard price to cut back on. And more importantly, it's very hard to cut back on that when there's still a shortage of labor.
But if you were to go back to your burger price in 2000 versus today, I'll bet it's at least doubled. Well, it's not I mean, it's not like they have, but the leases and everything, all of a sudden the leases and the electric bill and the gas bill and all that stuff has totally usurped. And then now the idea that the cook actually wants to raise is like the last straw on the camel, right? Because the other stuff.
We want to make sure that. We want to make sure that place has a good cook. There's no question about it.
All right, Dan, take care of yourself. Still looking forward to seeing you.
Yes, be there in a few weeks.
Yep, S&P futures down 11, NASDAQ futures down 17. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howell. Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 950. NASDAQ futures down 13. Dow futures down 85. We've got, let me look and see. Well, this is the regional bank index, if you don't know that, is, what is it? If I can find it. Anyway, it's a KRE is a regional bank index, and it's down again this morning, $1.54. It's KRE, Spider S&P Regional Banking. That has been down for a while. That's if you wanted to, I'm not saying you should trade it. I'm just saying that's the ETF. If you want to keep quick track of the regional banks, that's one way to look, one way to do it. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX. These guys are down a little bit more than they were before. DAX down now on 136.9%. FTSE down 62.8. CAC around down 79. It's 1.1%. So they're definitely down a little bit more than they were. ECB confirms a 25 basis point hike as well today, so that's driven them down a little bit more. Over in Asia, the Nikkei, they were closed. They're closed, so they're nothing on the Nikkei. Hang Seng is open. They're up 249, 1.3%. Shanghai is open. They're up 27, 8.82%. But now they haven't been traded since last Friday, so that's a weak catch-up. So I wouldn't put so much stock in the two Chinese stocks today. Yesterday, as a way of review, we were up most of the day. Then we turned south. The Dow ended up down 270 and S&P down 28. So it ended up being kind of a crummy day. Bonds, 10 years down 2 basis points, 3.38. The Bund unchanged, 2.26. Japan up 2 basis points, 0.42. We've got oil continuing. Actually, now it's up a little bit, but still. Only up 8 cents, 68.68. Still under 70 bucks. Brent up 30 cents, 72.63. Natural gas up a penny, 2.18. RBOB unchanged, 2.32. We got gold rallying today, up 1070, 2047, maybe making a run towards 2100. Silver up 20 cents, 2588. Copper up 2 cents, 386. We've got Bitcoin is up 745, back over 29,000, 29,104. It's trading like against the dollar almost every day now. We got the euro, the dollar is up. It was down a while ago when the European Bank came out with this number. It kind of changed a little bit. So right now, the euro is actually down a little bit. Up a little bit against the... I'm sorry, it's down 41 cents, which means the dollar is up. So that's 110, and the British pound is 1.25. Andrew, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
All right, it is 7:40 here in Chicago. Starting off with some sports, just some baseball here. Over in Arizona, the Diamondbacks won over the Rangers, ending their game 12-7. And here in Chicago, the Cubs lost to the Nationals 2-1. But the White Sox won over the Twins 6-4. Now over to Chicago weather. It is currently 45 degrees. Sunny and clear sky. It's going to be a pretty nice one today. And for the next couple days, too, going to have a high of 70 today. And over in Phoenix, they're a little colder than usual. They're at 63 degrees right now. Clear skies. And they're going to have a high of 79 today.
We might be as warm as them.
Yeah, we might beat them for once. So, over to Chicago traffic. A lot more red than we were seeing in the first hour. But still, thankfully, no major accident, looks like. Looks like just some average buildup. So that's on all inbound expressways. But it looks like if you're coming from the Eisenhower or the north side on the 94, you're going to be getting traffic on the outbound as well. So that's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
Good morning, Tom.
How are you?
Good. Yourself?
I'm hanging in there. We're different stuff. We're hearing from different people, and I was very interested in when I heard the thing about the drone. I foolishly started thinking about, let's see how far it is from Ukraine to Moscow, thinking it had to come all the way. Obviously, that's not what happened. So I wonder how many other idiots out there like me who think it came all the way from Ukraine, when Lou says it probably came from the suburbs at best. So. Can you real quick, because Lou was talking about the poor bears. What is, if you go buy a house when they have appraised values, but all of a sudden you go pay, you know, $1 million for something that was, you know, 40 years ago traded for $100,000 or something? How quickly does that new valuation, I mean, I think the story on this thing is the bears tried to run something through the state legislature to essentially freeze their taxes for, what, 20 years or 30 years, yeah, or some huge number. So people caught wind of that. Now immediately the assessor says, well, that's not going to work. He'd be assessed it now essentially what they just paid for it. So, I mean, are they being harmed there, or are they just being treated like everybody else, which in their mind would be being harmed?
It's the kind of the way the world works these days, Tom. I'm sure that the Bears and, you know, every other owner of a sports facility or a sports team makes the argument to their, you know, respective, you know, state legislators and lobbyists. Look what we bring to the table. Look what we bring to Arlington Heights.
With zero proof whatsoever. Zero proof in numbers whatsoever.
Right, and in the world of, you know, that they operate in, and when you have legislators and lobbyists who are salivating over these, you know, imagined benefits, it's pretty easy to get these packages put together where they think, oh, look at what we're going to be able to collect on, you know, restaurants and, you know, tolls at the, you know, at the interstate and parking. and, you know, hotels and everything else because of this. You know, it's going to be great. We've got nothing else on the table half as good as this. We've got to give them whatever they want, or they'll go elsewhere. Then we'll be kicking ourselves, you know, for the next 15 years. So let's just do it. And there's this fatalistic, you know, jump in, you know, with your eyes wide open and expecting everything to pan out a particular way because you've got nothing else to bank on. It's not so much that there isn't the possibility of some benefit, but it's completely oversold because there's nothing else out there. And this tends to make these deals look a lot better than they are. But if you just sat down and crunched the numbers, you think, well, maybe it'll be good, but it won't be anything like what you're promising here. So let's not do it this way. Let's not freeze your taxes for 20 years. Let's do it for 2 years. You know, anything else, but clearer heads never prevail in this kind of situation.
Well, you also get a feed. I mean, somebody on the Arlington Park board is going to end up with some kind of contract for something, or owns a hot dog stand across the street that says it'll be great for me.
Right, and they will have retired, and you know everything will have changed by the time all this stuff surfaces or the reality becomes clear to everyone. You know what a crooked deal it was. Nobody's going to care then, but it shows the short-sightedness of, you know, city planners, business, you know, people who play into this. You know, and who wouldn't go to some willing outfit that had benefits to strew around and give you what, you know, you think you're entitled to, whereas, you know, in a real market economy, nobody's entitled to that. I don't care who you are. I don't care what kind of dreams you're selling. You're not entitled to that kind of benefit.
Well, it's not. It's not. If it were to happen, it's not even. I mean, I have actually a good friend who could be very frustrating at times. We have a few of those, don't we, Jen? And when they were, you know, he wanted the city to give all kinds of money to the Cubs, and you know, of course, we just gave a bunch of money to the Bears, and we gave a bunch of money to the Sox, right? I don't know what United Center. They did a lot of stuff infrastructure-wise, so it wasn't like it was a free deal for the city there either. But and by and large, I think most of that was private. But I was mentioning, I said, you know, if it's even, I don't have a problem with it. If you can actually prove to somebody that you essentially stole revenue from another state via somebody coming in and a family coming in to see three Cub games that would never have come to Chicago for any other reason, I guess if you could prove that, you know, and you were accretive of $100 million a year, there maybe should be some benefit to you, maybe. But I also look at a building, a city back in those days that was absolutely vibrant. You had exchanges here. You had hotels. You got conventions. I mean, everybody seems to be part of something that's working pretty well. And I'm not so sure you could say this person was that much more a benefit than somebody else. I mean, and I said, you know, what about us? At the time we were doing, we were involved in a group that did seminars here. Now, we didn't advertise for them, we did everything, but what we did for them is they were learning about options. And what we did is we say, okay, if you come to Chicago, we can get you a mock trading and a CBOE floor, which people love to do. We can get you a tour of the floor, those kinds of things. We didn't, you know, we were not part of, we never made any money on these things, these guys. But we would ever give a speech about how to do option, what kind of broker, what the broker should do, how they put an order in, blah, blah, blah. And then we went on the trading floor. Anyway, at one point, at the tippy top, I'm going to say 2 weeks a month, there were 50 to 60 people here that came a whole week, you know, stayed five nights or six maybe, had at least, you know, 12 restaurant meals, maybe more, and did pretty well in the bars around here. And I'm going to say in the summertime, probably half the people took in a Cub game or a Sox game or something on one of the nights. I mean, it was good for the place. Now, I said to my buddy, okay, now if the Cubs are doing it, I can prove that there's, you know, whatever, 50,000 a month coming in from these seminars. And his response was, nobody wants to listen to you. You're too small. They shouldn't even talk to you, was the response. So I said, okay, so it's not a window where if you could prove to anybody that you were accretive on something coming in, It's all about whether you happen to like baseball or football, you know, and whether or not somebody has a big enough firm to make this all happen and threaten to leave. And he goes, well, yeah, they should never give anything to people like you. This guy's a friend of mine, right? And, you know, which I'm getting a little heated about this, actually. So the idea of fairness here, Jen, I mean, the Board of Trade Visitors Gallery for decades was the second most visited. Now, how do we know that somebody didn't come to town to see the trading floor and they went to the Cub game and the Cubs should pay them? I mean, how do, unless you actually
absolutely,
work
your, yeah. Absolutely, Tom. I completely agree. Or nobody has that study. Nobody cared enough to determine, well, what's the draw here? Who are these people? Did you interview any of them and find out what else they did, where else they spent money while they were here? Nobody knows that. It would certainly, I think, prove what you just said.
Or you could just take the argument that it's a vibrant city. It's we're all in this together. We're all making it nice for the guy next to us, and he's making it nice for us. And it's like the human body. You know, if the brain shuts down, nothing works. The heart shuts down, nothing works, right? I mean, you can't say which is the most important part. I mean,
My experience, Tom, you know, I lived in Lakeview, just about three blocks from third base at Wrigley Field, right at the switchover when night games, you know, were instituted. And, you know, the everything seemed to change totally in the neighborhood within a year or two. And that, I would say, for the better. Parking became impossible. Crime exploded. Noise, drunks on the street at 3 a.m. All this stuff that you know has to be somebody's price paid for whatever else is going on in your city's nightlife was borne disproportionately by the taxpayers and the people who were just trying to live their lives in an area that had always been fairly sleepy, despite the fact that there was a National League baseball team.
Well, that's because they would have 2,000 people there during the week for a game,
right? And this is something else that never gets figured in the equation. What if you get 10 years of losing teams and incompetent management, which seems to be the norm in Chicago these days? Where's the big revenue boost to everybody? You know, the Cubs, to my knowledge, never kicked in anything to the Chicago Police Department or parking enforcement. They got the benefit of all these people descending on the neighborhood and hanging around long after they were too drunk to drive. The people in the neighborhood put up with it. And, you know, maybe that's a tax on them that they should bear because they live in a kicky neighborhood that other people want to move into, and it boosts their property values, but it also boosts their real estate taxes and reduces their quality of life. So you look at all the money that gets thrown around. And the people who have to live next door to this, or who didn't expect it to become like this, are really footing the bill for it. And you're depending on their good graces not to move away, or not to start some vigilante group against this mob that's descending on their neighborhood every weekend. I think people take too much for granted. You know, where's the payback for those people?
Well, you're talking about. There was a. By the way, when I say just a few years ago. This guy actually made his way over to the University of Chicago. There was a guy named Ronald Coase. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I can't place that name.
Ronald Coase was a a guy died a few years ago. He was like 94 or something. He wrote an article when he was young. It probably was the pivotal article, and he coined the term an economic externality. You know what that is?
Oh yeah.
So it is so accurate. I mean, it was before people got iron bad lungs and all that kind of stuff. It had to do with a town in Britain where a factory came to town, and everybody was wanting jobs in the factory. And we're not talking about people being maybe they're breathing the soot and whatever. And it all had to do with how people used to have to, this before paint. People used to whitewash their what was whitewash? Was it just white lead, or what the hell was that?
It was a powder that was mixed. There was house paints like this, too. Yeah, we washed really the thing off completely after a couple of years.
Yeah, and he said normally you'd have to whitewash your house and your fence every 5 years. But now the factory, belched out some particulate dirt, and going to people, getting in their lungs and dying. So now everybody had to whitewash their fence every 3 years. So you essentially... And the place didn't come by, and give you the whitewash after 3 years and make up the difference for you. So it was a cost that was borne by other people because of the factory. Now, it may have been very much worth it, where now people, instead of tending sheep, are now making whatever, $20 an hour, and maybe the factory was fairly healthy inside and everybody was a net winner. But either way, somebody in town who had nothing to do with that factory, there was a cost that applied to him, and probably more because he's breathing the stuff on top of it. But there was a cost that was applied to him that the factory never had to bear, hence the name economic externality. It was a cost that you were able to put on other people and never actually had a pony up for it, and which is exactly what you're talking about. I mean, this last year, I don't know if you've noticed, but you could have predicted, now that the games are 30 minutes shorter, evidently on the night games now, the traffic in the bars is picked up dramatically as people now leave the stadium a half hour sooner.
Yep.
So if you and I owned a bar up there, this is going to be our best year in the last 10, probably, which is fine. I mean, maybe it actually is going to work for those guys for a change.
It should have been that way all along.
Well, yeah. But I'm saying all this stuff works together. I mean, that is, if there is a theme to the show, it's to try and point out how you can't just do one thing over here and not affect the guy over here. And that's why I'm so upset with our Fed and our elected officials, that they're the ones that caused this no interest for 10 years. And now, as it's going the other way, they're stunned by the repercussions of the change and how you go from one level to another. And God's sake, Jan, all you had to do is take 1 year of Money in Banking at Notre Dame, and you could have predicted all this. Didn't even have to go to the University of Chicago.
Well, one thing you would expect from a public official, Tom, you know, somebody who's supposedly studied stuff and has earned the right to make decisions for large groups of people, is a little bit of foresight. It doesn't have to be a lot of foresight, but to read the signals well enough, better than most people can, to say, well, if you do this, you've got a 90% chance of this happening. Are we prepared for that? Well, you know, then you might make a more reasoned decision, but nobody ever really has talked about that, especially with the interest rate disaster. And yet, anybody who had taken a finance class or knew much about history could have said, well, this is absolutely going to happen at some point. How long do you expect to be doing this for? 10 years? I don't think anybody would have admitted to that back in 2008. And look what we ended up with anyway. But no foresight, you know, in the room, apparently. And of course, once you conclude that there's nothing to be worried about, and that, you know, we just keep doing what we're doing, let's repeat it again. It's kind of like with the rate increase, you know, yesterday. They didn't have to do anything, really. Instead, they raised it. So, now I'm just concerned that this is all too much too late, and the system is already cratering. And the last thing we need is just this blind, you know, damn the torpedoes attitude.
Well, the idea, the mistake was made by ever going below like 2.25.
Right, and keeping it there.
And it'd been going down to zero, but now you told an entire generation of people, this is it. Don't ever expect to get any interest. You told a lot of bankers, don't worry about it. Don't worry about ever paying any interest. Go out 30 years on a 1.5% U.S. bond. You'll be fine. All of a sudden, in order for people to keep their money there, they want 2.5-3%. And you're sitting there going, I can't pay them because, by the way, I don't really have a whole lot of loans. All my money is in these federal things that are now, they're now worth not that much. And I don't have real loans. If you did, you probably wouldn't have the problem. Of course, you still got your credit cards where you're fleecing people at 25 and 30. So it's not like they're in real bad. I mean, the big credit card people, the Citigroups, the people that still got to be raking in a bunch of dough here.
No tag days for them.
No.
Tom, I'm worried, you know, and all of this stuff about how unsettled the banking industry is because of unrealized losses in their investment portfolio. Imagine what this means, you know, for anybody who's got investments in commercial real estate. And there's a really good piece in today's or yesterday's Epoch Times, a guy named Collins, that says this is the next big exposure for the banks. I mean, it's one thing if you've got, you know, bonds or T-notes, or you can't, you know, it's meaningless collateral given what your exposure is right now. You're going to be underwater immediately if anybody starts pulling money out. But if you've also got a portfolio loaded with overvalued real estate, those are unrealized losses too. If they're distressed and the bank has to take title to them, now they're hemorrhaging money that they
Was the term we used last week that were where you look at the building and they've gone from 90% occupant to 80 to 70 to 60 and right now they're still you still get the mortgage check every month, but you know one of these months you're not going to get it. What was the name of it?
Criticized loans.
Criticized loans, yeah.
There's already, you've lost an anchor tenant, or a tenant is in serious financial trouble. You don't know if that location is going to have a retail establishment 6 months from now. There's nobody's defaulted, nobody's made a short payment or late payment or anything, but the winds of what's coming out of the pike are telling you this is when you got to put in a separate stack. And you would think this would mean that somebody would then watch it and be a step ahead of the game, which I guess is a good thing if somebody is actually looking, but it doesn't seem to matter when it came to...
Well, you don't seem to see these guys piling up their loan reserve losses. They should be, probably. I ran this guy last night, and he probably had maybe one too many, but he was saying, that's it, I'm out of here. The idea of these people being dumb enough to tell people they're going to put low-income housing in the loop at the same time they're trying to attract businesses. He goes, we can't have leadership like this. They're too dumb. I mean, you can't be doing both of those at the same time. Tell me you're going to turn downtown into Cabrini Green at the same time you're trying to lure a big company here.
Well, you'd be better off putting whatever incentives you have to throw around to operations like the McCaskey family and say we're going to dedicate a building downtown on South Street that currently needs help, and every other building needs help too, but we got to show what direction we're headed in and where our energies are going to go and attract some businesses, make it possible for somebody to actually have that space used for business purposes. If you don't have that, then you can pretty much bet that low-income housing will take over and it will be the norm on LaSalle Street. And as you said, it will turn into Taylor Homes. I hate to say it, but what else is it going
to
turn into?
Yeah, I'm trying to find an example of a city anywhere that has come back from what we're dealing with right now. A lot of the stuff was COVID and everything else made things a hell of a lot worse, but somehow or another, we have to figure out what the advantages are that we have and push for them. And the advantages are the incredible transportation system that only a few cities have. I mean, there's a lot of advantages, but I don't see anybody being able to put this package together for people, do you?
No, when you have ideologues like Lou was talking about earlier, who not only distrust business, but seem to actually want to work against it. The whole idea of somebody starting a business to make money and employ people, who needs that? If you're a community organizer, that's what you're organizing against, pretty much.
I loved everything Lou said. Loved everything Lou said, except I'm not so sure to include the Bears. enough. One family, for God's sake, 10 games a year. What's the difference? John, thank you very much. I might even see you one of these days. You never know. S&P Futures down 10. NASDAQ Futures down 15. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks. Big Labor Day. Tomorrow, labor numbers come out. So it's the big day of the month with Carl, because we go through them like nobody else does. So hopefully everybody with us tomorrow.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.